Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
I want to tell you all a story about a Harper Valley widowed wife who had a teenage daughter who attended Harper Valley Junior High. Well, her daughter came home one afternoon and didn't even stop to play. And she said, Mama got a note here from the Harper Valley PTA. Well, the note said...
This meeting will come to order. The first order of business is...
I'd like to address this meeting of the Harper Valley PTA.
Point of order. There are no motions from the floor called for at this time. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Unanimous. The chair denies.
Let her speak.
Sure, Stell. What you got in your mind?
I'd like to hear, too.
This is still an open forum for Harper Valley citizens, and everyone has the right to be heard.
You wrote me a letter that I'd like to reply to in public. You say I'm not fit to live in this fine American town, that I don't come up to your standards, or whatever you consider decent. Well, I am here to call a few kettles black.
Hello, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
We're still doing a brand new episode every single week. We're so fortunate that we have such a great and engaged listener community that has been right there with the suggestions week after week after week. And they've had some really good ones that I don't think we would have come up with ourselves.
Indeed.
Because we're doing, during this pandemic time, we're doing a new episode every week. We're kind of expanding our definition of book. And we're doing the movie adaptations from other shorter literary sources, short stories, novellas, magazine articles, and as in the case of this week's episode, a song.
Yeah. Yeah. A really catchy song, by the way. It's kind of hard to get it out of your head when it's once it's there.
It will get in your head. Yeah. But before we get to today's episode, we want you to know, if you're brand new, that there's a few places where you can interact with Margot D and Margot P and other listeners of this podcast on the internet.
Yes. So we do have a basic Facebook page. Be sure to like it. All the episodes are posted there, but we're really interactive in our Facebook group. And in our Facebook group, we really do just talk about books and movies, and people are constantly throwing around different suggestions for us, which we really appreciate. So you just go to Facebook and type Book VS Movie Podcast Group, ask to join, and we will let you in. We also have a Twitter account, We're on Twitter. I'm not 100 years old. It's at Book Versus a Movie. You just spelled it out. Also with Instagram. Please follow us on Instagram. If you're on Instagram, we would really love that. And we also just have a basic email, Book Versus Movie Podcast. Spell that all out. @gmail.com. And Margot set up that we have these gorgeous new bookmarks that I'm so excited about. If you would like to get one, please let us know.
Yes, please do. And we have some fun new stuff because we have a new logo, which I'm really enjoying playing around with. Oh, did we talk about Patreon?
No, if you want to support the show financially, totally cool. You can find us at Patreon, Patreon. We've been doing the show for over 6 years now. All of the episodes from 2019 and then previous to that are starting to go up there. We have over 75 episodes on our Patreon page. Some of them are free. So just go and check it out if you want to. But we have a couple of affordable options. And so just go to PATRION and look up Book vs Movie Podcast.
All right. So today we are talking about the movie based on the hit song of our youth, Harper Valley PTA. Has this song been in your head all week like it's been in mine?
I can't get it out of my head. Oh, God. Like that ELO song.
A little story. Yeah. So the story of this song is actually very interesting. And I always, you know, I remember when I was a little girl hearing this song on the radio, that it always reminded me of another song of the era, which is a beautiful song. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, is that a great song? Also gets stuck in your head, you know.
Yes.
It's the one about the Tallahatchie Bridge. And that was a massive hit for, Ode to Billy Joe was a massive hit for singer-songwriter Bobby Gentry. That was a story that she wrote. It's a very kind of story song sung by a woman from a woman's point of view.
I was born in Chickasaw County. When I was six, we moved to another region in Mississippi called the Delta. And we lived between two rivers. One was the Yazoo, and the other was the Tallahatchie. It was a 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. And Papa said to Mama as
the Harper Valley PTA was written almost immediately when that song, when Ode to Billy Joe had hit the airwaves. And a really interesting story about how it came about. Not just that the producers were like, oh, people want, you know, women singers singing these story songs, but the whole story of how Harper Valley PTA, which was an international smash hit, came about, I thought was rather interesting.
Did you see the clip? I was checking around on YouTube, and there's, so our writer is Tom T. Hall, and our
Spider-Man.
Yes. And he was known as the storyteller. He and Jeannie C. Riley, who is our singer of this particular song that we're talking about today, there's been many people who've redone the song, including Dolly Parton and Loretta Lynn, who we talked about on our show. There's a segment I saw, and it was TNN, if you know the network, that used to be called the Nashville Network.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a show called Opry Live. In 1984, they did an interview with Tom T. Hall and Jeannie. They did a return to Harper Valley, but they also talked mm-hmm. about the origin of it. And he said that when he was a kid growing up in the 40s, that there was a girl that was being picked on by the PTA, which stands for Parent Teacher Advisory Association.
Association.
So my parents never belonged. So they, it's a thing here in the States. I don't know if they have it in other parts of the world. So Tom wrote about, he said there was a woman that very similarly, she was a bit of an outcast and was beating, you know, dancing to her own drummer boy, whatever. And he thought about her for years. And then he said about 20 years later, he came up with the song and he approached a few different people to record it. And they all said no, except for Jeannie, and who took it right away.
Yeah. Now I heard a slightly different version of the story.
Okay.
From the producer and owner of the record label, fascinating character by the name of Shelby Singleton.
Yes.
So Shelby Singleton was this kind of impresario figure in country music. He eventually bought Sun Records. Really interesting background. He was actually, I believe he was a chemical engineer. he worked for a rayon manufacturer. And oddly, his wife at the time, who was named Margie Singleton, had a couple kids. You know, people married kind of young. It was right after World War II. Had a couple kids and wanted to be a country singer. And she made these kind of little recordings. And her husband, Shelby, would, kind of like we talked about in Coal Miner's Daughter, he would go on the road and stop any place he saw a radio antenna and go in and talk these DJs into playing his wife's records. And he was like super good at this, just like a really brilliant marketing guy, just could talk these people into buying these records. So much so that he kind of got a reputation among the radio folk. Eventually, he ends up being the marketing guy for Mercury Records.
Really?
And he's so good at that, that one day a producer of theirs kind of drops out unexpectedly and they hire Shelby to produce a record. I forget which record it was, but it became a hit. So now he's also a hit record producer. So he's a marketing guy with a great ear who can also produce. So what's the guy that wrote the song? Tom
T. Hall.
Tom T. Hall had this song. Again, it was sort of, he kind of wrote it once Ode to Billy Joe was on the air. He was like, well, I got a song like that, right? So Shelby Singleton is like, this is a great song. And he first has Margie, his wife, record the demo. So she's the one who first records it. The producer's wife is the one who records the song. But Shelby said that he really wanted, there were people who turned it down, but he was looking for a singer that had like a real sass in her voice. He says he was looking for this kind of sassy sound. Jeannie C. Riley, who I think Tom Hall, you're right, Tom Hall was the one who had found her, brought him a demo of her, and he was like, that's the voice. And they record the song. It's a hit within days, like days.
Yeah.
Of it coming out. And he said, Shelby, the producer, said it was such a smash hit internationally that they were literally shipping the records hot off the presses. Like he could barely keep up with the demand for this record. He had like at least four manufacturers who were pressing this record around the United States to keep up with the demand.
I think also, Margo, we should talk about the content and the give it context, because this is 1968. It's a very violent time. I mean, there's also, there's protests, there's the Vietnam War, the RFK was killed, Martin Luther King were killed in, I believe, 1968. That was when those happened. And it was just a time of upheaval. And on top of all that, this notion of second wave feminism and how, you know, women seeking rights. And so here's this song from a very distinct female point of view. Mm-hmm. And she's a woman who, her name is Mrs. Johnson. She's a Harper Valley widowed wife. She has a teenager. She's going to junior high school. And there's a mother there that's like, she comes home with a note from her mom. And the PTA is saying, you wear your skirt's too short. You're drinking. We know you're with other men. You are not bringing up your daughter the right way. And we have a problem with you. And she is pissed. And she goes right back to, the meeting and individually calls people out for their hypocrisy, their total hypocrisy. She walks away and then that's the day she socked it to the PTA. And yes, she has a very sassy voice. I mean,
it's a great voice.
Oh, it's perfect for this song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
You can see why people just loved it. Yeah. You know, the women's lib movement, quote unquote, was just kind of fomenting. And, you know, I mean, the song's written by a man. Mm-hmm. And okay, you know, it's sort of capitalizing on the Ode to Billy Joe phenomenon, but it's not a bad message. It's not, I don't feel like it's trivializing
No.
Women's Lib. You know, I think it's and it's fun and it's funny and it's a great song.
I agree. And it's so funny. And I'll play a little clip of this on the TNN show because the guy who's interviewing them, I'm sorry, I don't know his name, but he's saying, well, she was a real radical, wasn't she? The character of Mrs. Johnson. And it's like, is she? I think she's...
She's kind of just a person.
She's just a human being, you know, living her truth and, you know, trying to be a good parent and good citizen and having fun and having a beer occasionally and whatever. So it's... But it, you know, for some people, it was... Some of them was like, yeah, it was like a slap in the face. And there were mostly they got positive feedback. A few people wrote and said, you're going to ruin PTAs forever. How dare you? But the person that was in charge, the president of the PTA across the U.S., made her a lifetime member.
Isn't that
hilarious?
I mean, hilarious.
It's great public relations.
And pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. I think it's pretty cool, too. And parent-teacher associations, I mean, I don't know the exact origin, but they're meant to be places where parents and teachers can kind of air out grievances or talk about ideas and stuff like that. Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was really a testament to Jeannie C. Reilly, I mean, yes, she didn't write the song, but to her performance and her really extraordinary vocals of this song, you know, that in spite of the fact that, yeah, it was recorded and released by Dolly Parton, Loretta Lynn, countless others. One of the things I thought was really interesting that the producer mentioned about this single and its success, he was talking about how, because he when he worked for Mercury Records especially, he did a lot of international producing. He brought Quincy Jones back to the United States. Quincy Jones had been working in Europe. Shelby Singleton persuaded Quincy to come back to the United States, and you know, without Shelby Singleton, there may not have been a Thriller. Or what's the other one that Quincy Jones?
Oh, he's done them all. He did Ray Charles' last album.
Yes. So because Shelby Singleton convinced him to come back to the U.S. At least that's what he says. But the other thing that he mentioned that I thought was really cool, because he also produced records in Europe with European artists, and he said that it was very common if there was a hit song in the U.S. that an artist, you know, a known artist in like France or Italy would record it in that language for that market.
Right.
But with this song, it was only ever Jeannie C. Reilly's version. People just loved those vocals and they didn't even care that they couldn't understand the language very well.
Or knew what a PTA was.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think that's pretty cool that her performance of this is that, you know, people just connected with it so deeply that even internationally across language barriers, it was a hit.
It was a smash hit. It was the number one song in the U.S. It was the number one Billboard Hot 100 song for pop and for country, which did not happen again until Dolly Parton. With
till nine to five, right?
Exactly. And so this was a very popular song. Jeannie C. Reilly, she became a born again Christian in the 70s. She always sang this song at her concerts and they're both still with us. She still does, but she had a problem a bit with the message. And so in 84, she wanted Tom T. Hall to write a sequel called Return to Harper Valley. And it didn't become a hit because it's basically, it's the same song. I mean, they just do it the same cadence and everything. But it's sort of like, well, this one died of cirrhosis of the liver. And this, she doesn't wear miniskirts anymore. And this one now is faithful to his wife. And it's like, yeah, those are all nice things, but who cares? Like, or not nice things. I'm sorry. Dying of cirrhosis of the liver isn't nice, but everybody knows drinking excessively is bad. I mean, it's just...
It's like everybody faces the wrath of God.
Exactly. it's just not as fun. It's just...
No, it is not. Yes, it's bright. Widow Jones is dead, she and a young kid missed a curve on Lover's Lane. Miss
Mr. Kelly's gone. He drank until they said it took his liver and his brain. Well, the music started up and it was louder than a thunderstorm in May. Well, I stood there and I laughed to see the way the kids all get their kicks today. Then I saw a man who gave a cigarette to some small kid too young to smoke. He was a full-grown man and he was set up in the parking lot selling dope.
No, no. I mean, what's fun is this song, and it's like we said, it just sticks in your head. We can play just snippets of it. We can't afford to play the whole song for you. We just don't have that kind of a budget.
No.
But should we start talking about this movie?
So, but one thing we should say is that, again, like, it was such a smash hit. This song, I mean, this song came out before I was born, mm-hmm. but I just remember it being on the radio all the time.
Everywhere you went. You know,
it would be in the supermarket. It would be, it would be in the car radio. It would be on TV, you know, just for years. Because the movie is like 10 years later, right?
It's 1978. And so I could not find, and someone's going to find it in 2 seconds, but I'm trying to find the trailer for it. There's no trailer. I don't know about you, Margo, because I remember there was a TV series for like a year or two. I didn't really watch it very much. I used to love Fanny Flagg, and Fanny Flagg is in there. And I love, of course, Barbara Eden is our Widow Johnson, who's, good God, is she beautiful.
She really is.
She's rocking it. But anyway, I thought this film was a TV movie and then became a TV series. And then I proceed to watch this movie and I'm like, I can't imagine this being on.
Exactly. On TV. Even then.
Even then. I was like, yeah. This is before HBO, guys. I mean, it's like.
Yes, before HBO. And we see a couple of booties.
We do see some older booties. I mean, they're sort of. I was thinking to myself, this is sort of like the person whoever directed Porky's watched this first.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, you're so right.
It's so Porky's-esque.
So, I mean, okay, yeah, this movie is bat poopy. It's, we found it on YouTube.
Yes.
So here's the thing. When you find it on YouTube, go ahead and watch it. It's just insane. When you find it on YouTube, the whole opening is silent because they obviously didn't have the licensing, mm-hmm. YouTube. To play the Jeannie C. Reilly song, which I assume is what's playing over the opening and the closing. And at first, you know, watching that and it's silent, you're like, oh man, I mean, I wanted to hear the song. I'm watching this movie and I'm not going to get to hear the song. Don't worry. Don't you worry about it. You're going to hear it again and again and again and again and again. You're going to hear it in the disco version. You're going to hear it with like a classical bent. Oh, so many versions of this song.
It's R-rated. I think it would be like a PG-13 today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of cursing from what I remember.
No, there's not.
There's not, but there's some nudity. It's 1978. This movie was produced by a production company called April Fools. It was released into drive-in movie theaters.
What?
In 1978. And I miss drive-ins. They were so much fun.
They were. Yes, they were. We have one left.
Yeah.
In San Diego.
They were starting to get a little bit more popular here because of COVID. It's a place to go. Mm-hmm. But I think that's it. It just was a car culture in America. Cars used to be gigantic.
Yeah.
And it was a cheap thing. Like for my parents, they're like, we could see a movie and you guys could fall asleep in the back. And it was fun.
Yeah. Like y'all don't even know. Y'all born like once seatbelts became imperative. People used to drive around. We basically would ride around in an entire living room set. It was like two sofas.
It was gigantic. Surrounded by metal. And we had a station wagon, so it was like a huge back seat. And we all hung out in the back. And there's like, there's four kids. And then, you know, my parent, you become friends with other people who have a lot of kids when you have a lot of kids. I mean, that just, so we're always going to the movies or going to the beach or whatever. But like that back of the station wagon was always full. So this was released into to drive-in theaters in the summer of 1978. And it makes a boatload of money. It's just, they probably spent $500,000 on it. I mean, there's none of it's on that. The special effects are
every it's the tightest 1 hour and 41 minutes
ever. There's no extra footage available, I'm sure. They just shot real quickly. And
oh my gosh, this movie.
It's bananas, you guys.
It's so nuts.
It's so, it's great though. Like
it is.
It's really fun.
It is super fun. So again, spoiler alert. So it opens with Barbara Eden and what's her name?
Nanette Fabre,
who was a bona fide movie star, but a lot of us are, again, our age, know her as Anne Romano's mom from One Day at a Time.
Indeed.
She is great. You know, she's somebody with, you know, stage and screen experience. So it opens with Barbara Eden and Nanette Fabre singing some kind of old-timey song and drinking beer with a couple of guys in the middle of the afternoon. And it couldn't be, it honestly could not be more innocent. Especially as we're all coming off of, excuse me, but like 14 months of drinking in the afternoon. It seems quite tame for those of us who have lived through the last year and a half.
It is. She's a single mother. Barbara Eden is 47 at the time and looks
gorgeous.
Oh my God. A wrap dress was made for this woman.
Oh.
She looks so good. She's beautiful. She's a free spirit. Her daughter is played by Susan Swift. She's Dee Johnson. Now, Susan was in a movie that I saw as a kid called Audrey Rose, which used to freak me out.
Horror movie?
It's a horror movie. Mm. It's about a man whose daughter died, and he's convinced this other girl is possessed by her spirit. And there's a fire and all this crazy crap. So anyway, I like seeing her in a comedy here. I'm like, oh, good. She wasn't always in scary stuff. But Dee is being picked on. Dee wears braces, very 70s. And she's kind of, you know, at that awkward age. And people are giving her mom a hard time at her high school. There's this movie has, wrote them down, like they have wrap dresses. They have a makeover scene. She gets her braces off and her mom takes her to get her hair done.
Okay. So, so you, anybody watching this movie back in the day you would have known this song backwards and forwards. We all knew the song. We all knew how the song goes and what happens and the telling off of the PTA. So in the movie, the daughter comes home, she's got the note from the PTA, and the note in the movie says that the daughter's going to be expelled if the mom doesn't clean up her act, basically. And so Barbara Eden, the mom, goes to the PTA meeting that night. I guess there's one that night, which is very convenient. And she immediately tells everybody in the PTA off exactly as it is in the song.
If I haven't turned you down 7 times for lewd proposals, I haven't turned you down once. If I were you, Holly, I'd have taken this man in and had him neutered. Oh, and Holly, honey, you better lay off the booze, or Max Liquor Store is going to come and take your home for the booze bill.
And Mr. Kirby Baker, a fine real estate executive. Baker Realty. Honesty. Honesty since 1938. Your secretary,
Poor little Gladys Wilmot. She had to leave town awful sudden.
Coolie.
Had to see a special kind of doctor in Cincinnati. If you all know what I mean. And oh, I know the nights are just so warm that poor Willa May just has to leave her shades open an inch. Or so. Just to catch the cool summer breezes.
Of course.
And don't a few of our more prominent citizens simply love to stroll by Willa May's house these summer evenings and peek through the shades just for the entertainment? Oh, did you stay too long at Kelly's bar again, Otis? Oh, yes.
As a viewer, again, you're like, well, that's the whole song. Like, where do we go from here? Like, you just, like, that's the entire plot, isn't it? Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no. So she's not content to merely, you know, dress down every person on the PTA in public on the record. She now then goes on this bizarre, extremely criminal revenge spree.
Every single person that gave her a hard time, and they try to, like, of course, like, one of them tries to evict her from her home. There's definitely some stakes going on here, but
yeah.
But she's like, she and Nanette Febre, and there should have been like a dozen movies with them because they are hilarious together.
They have good chemistry together. I agree.
They do. And so they eat, you know, individually. We also didn't mention that she's got a boyfriend in this one. He's Ronnie Cox, who looks great. He's her boyfriend, Willis. But there's a lot of people that are giving her our time. And so she seduces one of the members. That's John Fiedler. Bobby Taylor, and then
wasn't he on Newhart all the time?
He was on Newhart, and isn't he the one that's in 12 Angry Men?
Yes, yes.
He's bald. He's a character actor. He was like,
yeah, really good.
Really good actor. He was in a bunch of stuff. She seduces him, and this poor man, they have him strip down, and she
like for realsies.
For realsies. She gets his clothes, so they're at a motel, and she kicks him out, kicks his butt, literally his bare butt, onto the floor. And then he tries, and then she steals his clothes and throws them away. And then he's arrested for indecent. What's that charge? Indecent
exposure.
Exposure. Thank you.
Yeah. And then, so he gets caught by the police, then freeze frame. And there's this disco, and you're like, what? Why are we freeze framing? Is there like a commercial break about to come up in this movie? What's going on? Then it kind of becomes clear that this is that's the code for like, oh, she got revenge on this person.
Right. And there's a scene where it's very Revenge of the Nerds-ish, is that they're filming a couple having sex. These are crimes, by the way.
It's all, oh my gosh, she's criming all over the place.
She really is.
She's getting revenge. So one by one, she's going after the members of the PTA. And let me just say, there are a lot of them.
Yes. She's busy.
She and Nanette Fabre, they get revenge on every single one. So the president of the PTA is some kind of fancy schmancy lady who Nanette Febre is, her character owns the hair beauty salon in the town. Mm-hmm. She puts some kind of messed up permanent in the woman's hair so it falls out in a big function. And she sees herself in the mirror and screams, and then freeze frame.
It's bizarre.
It's so nuts. Which again, illegal.
Illegal. That's illegal. You can't do that. They film a couple having sex, and then that's not bad enough. They splice it into a girl's so the girls at the high school, they used to do this thing. I don't know if they do this anymore. You might know because you have teenagers.
Yeah.
But then when they teach kids sex ed, which
they're doing much earlier now, but yes. Yeah.
But and actually very well. I was kind of shocked. I mean, like it's good information. Like that was better than I got. I was like, oh, that's how it should be presented.
Catholic school.
Yeah, well, yeah, say CCD and all that crap. So they intersplice with that film and they separate the boys and the girls as being my point. And so the girls are watching this film about you're going to be a woman and blah, blah, blah. And all the boys don't have their own film to watch. They're outside, but they go up to the window to watch in the window what the girls are watching. And then they play this movie and it turns it's out. It's pornography that they're showing.
The teacher. It's that teacher having sex with the postman,
which is.
So she and the teacher has fallen asleep at the beginning of the movie. So she wakes up and sees herself on the screen and all the children are going crazy in the classroom. And she screams, freeze frame.
The uterus is a pear-shaped hollow organ, frequently called the womb.
I think it is, Mrs. Jones. My God!
And during
that's what this movie is. It's just a series of and then she's also she's dating Ronnie. They have a very cute kind of relationship.
Yeah.
The daughter has a boyfriend. She gets a fella. It's very sweet sometimes and very charming, and then it just kind of veers in
it's so
bizarre directions. And
yeah,
I
was going to say so Barbara Eden's character and Nanette Faberet's character. So they're the ones that are doing these revenge stunts, crimes, one after another. And at a certain point, kind of near the end, the daughter, Barbara Eden's daughter, whose name is Dee or something like that, mm-hmm. she kind of catches on that her mom didn't just tell off the PTA. She is now committing major crimes against these individuals. And rather than like begging her to stop, you know, lest she, I don't know, go to jail, she's like, can I get in on this? And the mom is like, sure. And this is where it gets nuts. So first of all, it really just crosses the line because she's already committed so many crimes by this point. And they're laughing at these people. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, so. I think the last person or one of the last people that they get revenge on is one of the guy, his name is Harper. So it's one of the founding family members. And they've got the daughter in on this. So the daughter and Barbara Eden and Nanette Faberet rent a truck, like a U-Haul truck. And as you would, you know,
right.
And drive out of town to where there's a circus, whereupon they're giggling the whole time.
Yeah.
They chloroform a carny. I'm going to say that again. They chloroform a carny. And then they load the elephants into the truck, or do they paint them pink first?
Yes. Oh, and I love elephants. I mean,
me too.
Oh,
I was like, it's upsetting. They load these pink elephants now into the truck because, of course, they can handle elephants. And then they drive the elephants to this guy's home, Mr. Harper. Mr. Harper is, if you know the song, Mr. Harper drinks a lot at Kelly's Bar. Mm-hmm. And so he is home from Kelly's Bar. He is passed out. And these women unload the elephants. Nobody stops the big truck with the pink elephants coming out of it somehow, but they're all dressed in black. So it's like they're invisible. Right.
Right.
So they release live elephants into this home, creating, I think we can say, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage and endangering the lives of Mr. and Mrs. Harper, who are passed out and then running for their lives. Like, they are smashing the crap out of this house, these elephants. We don't quite know how the elephants, how do they get the elephants? How do they, when do they wash the pink off the, like, we just see the elephants smashing this mansion up and then freeze frame.
Ding, 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 ding. I mean, and obviously there's like a green screen or something going on. Like the actors are not that close to the elephants. So like they're kind of splicing it together.
Yeah.
So it's, but the thing, but the director of the movie was very upset about this. The first director, Ralph Sineski, because he's like, you're going to upset these elephants and you don't know what's going to happen because it's a wild animal. So one of the elephants got upset and attacked Nanette Fabre. She wound up in the hospital with a concussion and back issues and all kinds of stuff. So it shut down production for a few days. And then somebody else said, I'll finish directing this movie. And they had like a week left or something. And that was Richard Bennett who finished it. But yeah, there's things you could not do now. You would not get away with now. It's just played for laughs back then.
Yeah. But seriously, endangering lives and damaging property right and left.
Yeah.
Like it's some kind of Three's Company goof.
Yes, it's very Three's Company-esque. Yes, we expect Mr. and Mrs. Roper to show up, you know, in one of her moo-moos or something. And I think that's kind of it. I mean, you know, she exacts her revenge. She, you know, exposes all the hypocrisy. And at the very end, her boyfriend proposes to her. And then they wind up in a helicopter and they fly away from Harper.
As you do. Yeah, at some point along the way, the boyfriend convinces her to run for president of the PTA. Yes. And the PTA is trying to put a stop to this, which only causes Barbara to ramp up her tour of revenge even more.
It just angers her more.
Because that's who you want running the PTA.
Yes. Someone who wants to drink beer in the afternoon. Why would she want to do this? But that's the whole point of the song and the movie. And it's I don't know. It's really fun. It's considered like a cult classic, this movie.
Yeah. It is very Porky's. Many of the top character actors of the day in this movie. I forget the guy who is Kelly and Kelly's Barbara. He was in everything. And then Pat Paulson
is Mr. Harper. As Bob Hastings as Skeeter. He was in a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, and we forgot. Ugh. There's a scene where they have an Asian American woman.
Oh, yes.
Boy, this does not age well, where they have her seduce a man.
Yeah, I forget. Is he like a realtor or something?
Yeah.
He's a realtor who has a waterbed in his office.
Yes, the waterbed. Oh my God. And so she goes into the room and then she knocks him out or something?
I just want to say, if you're still listening.
Yes.
It's not us, I swear.
I thought it was a fever dream. So I had to put it on again because I'm like, did I really see this? Yeah.
I know, me too. Me too.
They used her to attempt, you know, seduce a guy, but knock him out. And then she rips her dress and says.
We should say.
Yeah.
That Barbara Eden, she's trying to come up with revenge for this realtor guy. And she says, she's going to go make a call. I'm going to order Chinese, and I don't mean egg foo young or something like that.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
No.
Oy, oy, oy. Yeah. Look, it's very much a product of its time. This was over 40 years ago. I can see, though, for Jeannie C. Riley, if she is a born-again Christian at this point, or you know, she wouldn't be too thrilled with this.
She'd have been mortified.
Yes. What's become of her song? So the movie, it does really well, and it becomes a TV series. And I was watching like just the opening credits, and they just play the song there. And it seems like it was perfectly enjoyable 30 minutes of television. It's not nearly as racy as this. I think that's what just shocked me. I was like, when I see that guy's bare ass, I was like,
yeah, whoa.
Did you get Amazon?
What?
I heard the clink. I think I'm getting a lot of Amazon packages. I heard that in the background on my Echo. Anyway,
I don't know what that
was.
It's
all a fever dream still. I think it becomes a TV series, and then that just lasts for like a year or two. And then she releases in 84, she releases The Return of Harper Valley, which doesn't become a hit. But anyway, that's the song. That's the movie. They're both. Go ahead.
What's his name? Ron Howard's brother.
Clint? Clint Howard is there. We have a Clint Howard thing. He's a delivery guy. He delivers the flowers.
He's in it. He's a recurring. He comes, shows up again and again and again. I should say the music, this is what cracked me up. So this, the whole movie is this song in different, you know, different styles. The music is by Nelson freaking Riddle. What? Nelson Riddle, for those of you who don't know, Nelson Riddle is probably the foremost, you know, musical arranger in American music history. He is the guy who did all of Frank Sinatra's arrangements.
That's right.
Like, he is a huge deal. And here he is in this movie, like all different versions of dear, 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 except for one scene. There's one scene in the rich lady's house. She's got these weird, creepy twin girls.
Right, right.
And there's this scene where they're playing a double piano concert, and they're playing this piece by Mozart, which I happen to know, not written for two pianos. it's the soundtrack is of a single person playing, but in the movie it's these two girls playing it. It's so weird.
There's a lot of weird stuff here. There's so much I know you remember things, and they're like, oh, that's right, oh my god. There's a Whatever Happened to Charlie Brown. There's Ice Cream Disco. That's the instrumental by Nelson Riddle. I'm looking at the soundtrack here. Oh my god. This is, the label was called Plantation Records. Yikes.
Yes.
There's just so much 70s going on here. I have to say though, it was fun. I mean, it's wrong.
Oddly, it's wrong. It's super wrong.
Morally, it's wrong, but it's entertaining.
You can't look away.
It's very watchable. It's a great suggestion.
It's just like, I think no matter how many times you watch this movie, you're just going to be like, wait, what?
Oh, we also forgot to mention, it's something you noticed right away. Woody Harrelson. This is like his first film. He's like an extra.
He doesn't say anything. He's just in the background. He's one of the teenagers at the high school where the daughter goes to school. Yeah, a lot of people in this movie that you would not think would be in a movie like this. it's wackadoo.
Yeah.
It's really sad. It's just, I still can't believe it.
I know. Like I said, I thought it was a fever dream. Like, did they give me the vaccination shot again? And I'm imagining this. I mean,
It is like that. What am I watching? And yeah, and then like you said, there's a makeover section in the middle for some reason. The dialogue is terrible. And yet.
And yet.
You will watch it.
I bet if it was like summer of 1978, when you're in a drive-in with some popcorn and a beer with your friends or whatever, I bet it was hilarious.
It had to be.
Yeah.
Just bananas. It's real weird.
It's weird.
There's this scene. Oh, there's this scene. There's so many crazy scenes in this movie. But this one that I found very strange. And I can only attribute it to, first of all, I want to know who edited this thing.
Michael?
It's so weird. Okay. I don't know what he was on. But there's this scene. It's after the makeover scene. And the daughter is like a hotsy-totsy now. And she and her mom and the mom's boyfriend are at like a track meet at the high school.
Oh, yeah.
Where her boyfriend is running in the track meet. And the girl is complaining because now that she's had this makeover, like now everybody wants to talk to her, where they didn't want to give her the time of day before. And Barbara Eden says something like, again, the dialogue is terrible. Barbara Eden says something like, you know, when God gives you a gift, just relax and enjoy it. Something like that. And the boyfriend says, want a hot dog? Like that. Like,
and she's eating a hot dog, by the way, as he's saying that.
She's already eating a hot dog. He offers her a hot dog.
Yes.
He offers her a hot dog, I believe, three times in this scene in which she's already eating a hot dog.
It's just...
What?
I know.
So weird. Like, what is it with you and the hot dog?
But I guess we enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's true.
I guess, no, what can we say? It's just like, yeah, it's morally wrong. It's wrong in every way, but... It's watchable.
So wrong. But you will watch it. You will.
Yes.
Guaranteed. You're going to watch this. Yep. And you won't care. You won't care that the opening is silent. Oh, my goodness. Very fun.
That was
fascinating learning about the way the song came about. Because I always, as a little girl, I always thought that it reminded me of Ode to Billy Joe.
Well, do you remember that movie?
Yes. That was Robbie.
Robbie Benson.
What's your name? Now that's a beautiful, that's a beautiful song. It's very serious.
Yeah.
And it's so well written and it's so well produced. And so is Harper Valley PTA, but it's, it's a different kind of song. Anyway, it's a great song, but I always thought that it seemed, kind of like a Munsters Addams Family kind of thing.
Yes.
It's nuts. So what are we doing?
Okay.
And it's bringing up Arrival. Like we do Arrival. Just this beautiful work of art.
Well, I was thinking, talk about left turns here. How about A Streetcar Named Desire?
Yes, I saw one of our listeners suggested.
Yeah.
Great.
It's a great movie. It's a really interesting director's story. And
written, a master work of American theater.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So we'll do that next time. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If it sounds a little different, we were just recording a little different today, but this whole thing is different today. This movie, the song, and everything is just a little askew. It's a little askew, but we super enjoyed it. Feel free to follow us on all of the things out there on social media. And we also have an Audible promotion. It's go to audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. If you want to check out their service, there are different versions of A Streetcar Named Desire there. They don't have Harper Valley PTA there. You can just stream that anywhere. And the film is on YouTube. The song you can hear anywhere. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me at Brooklyn Fit Chick for Twitter and Instagram. My blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And we'll be back next time with a very serious episode, A Streetcar Named Desire. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You could find more outstanding podcasts to subscribe to at frolic.media/podcasts. If you want to find us on Facebook, we have a basic Facebook page, Book vs. Movie. We also have a private Facebook group. Just type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Just spell that out. Our email address is bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show, we do have a Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/bookversusmovie. We also have a promotion with Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/bookversusmovie to check out their service for yourself. We record our shows using the Handy H6N, donated to us by generous fans from the show who joined our Patreon page. Thank you all so much. We so appreciate it. We'll be back soon with a new episode.
Way. And it was signed by the secretary.